that, boy, with an increase in salary that, I don't think you've ever heard this story.
Where was Valentine located?
Valentine Veer? Well, I guess it was in New Jersey.
Oh.
It was a New York beer.
As a low cost, I think.
Is it a low cost beer?
Oh, yeah, yes.
It's kind of the bottom of this.
Is that right?
This is when you were in New Jersey.
We were in New Jersey. And how this came about, actually, I don't know. But I know that it was a big step up financially from what he was earning at Walter Kitty. And it was enough to make us pause and think about it. But I know I said to him, you know, Clifford, if you go into a brewery, my mother will never, ever speak to you again. Which is
true.
She
was a WTCU.
Yes, yes. Oh, yes. She used to pride herself by saying, wine has never touched my lips. Oh, she was a very opinionated gal. Actually, she was wonderful. She was smart. She was great. But
you say New Jersey, was this northern Jersey, New York suburbs?
It was called Four Corners, and we actually lived in Clifton.
Yeah, Essex mm-hmm. County?
Okay.
Yeah. I was born in Essex County.
You were born at the...
Montclair?
Montclair mm-hmm. Hospital, yes.
Were you enjoying the... The experience is it's a different world from...
Oh, no. I wanted to get back to the Midwest. Yes. And I really, as I said, the money at Valentine was, wow, we'd never heard of that kind of money, you know. And now what it was today, I don't know. But I know that it was enough that it gave us pause mm-hmm. for thought. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'd like to say that we had enough integrity or of what we really needed to do that we didn't succumb to the money and I remember the discussions that Cliff, you've got to get your degree. And so with that we packed everything up in a little 4-month-old guy and in a Plymouth car and drove back
and came back here.
You were born in 46.
Yes, it'd be the fall of 46.
The fall of 46 then.
You're back.
And back we came back by Missouri and saw my folks and then headed up to Ames. Mm-hmm. And then I think then Cliff got into school then that fall mm-hmm. back in. And of course, obviously, you know, I tell you, we're running on mighty little money now because we had no support from my folks and we had no support from Clifford's folks. We were out there on our own. And so the important thing was, we had a trailer. And Dr. Deal let us put the trailer in his backyard. And that's where we lived. Mm-hmm. And that's where we were when he graduated. And I have a picture of him. At that time, you know, he put on his cap and gown. By the time he got that bachelor's degree, he was willing to put it on.
and simultaneously here, the business ideas are cooking.
Absolutely. All right. And then, that's right. And then the very last, this $15,000, we actually got the taxes because it was a one-time amount of money. We got the taxes down, it was either like 20 or 25%. Mm-hmm. And because there is a special provision in the IRS code for inordinate circumstances that you could have a lower tax mm-hmm. and we got it on that. And so boy, I tell you, we were really squeezing every penny in order because this was all the money that we had. And we also knew this was going to be the money to start a business. And that, the blocks for that three-room cement block building, I think that the bill was something like $900 for the blocks, and for the guy to lay the blocks was something like $1,700, $1,900, something like that. And then the graduate students came and helped us put the roof on. And we were in.
And you were in there at what's the moment, again, time that you...
We moved in the winter of 47, and we had a pot-belly stove for heat that we put in the middle room. Yeah. And that was... Boy, I tell you, this is kind of gut-wrenching, yeah. To look back on all of this. You know, here again, there wasn't a bathroom in that building. And, of course, in those days, you could do these things. And it was in the floodplain. And we have pictures when we flooded out.
And that was home and office, or home and...
We had a little three-room apartment that the Cliff was the maintenance person on, and so we only had to pay $55 a month rent because he fired the furnace and kept the hot water going and did some little maintenance around that apartment building. Mm-hmm. And so we did have that little apartment.
So the three-room building was the business?
The three-room cement block building was the business. And we took the last of the money and bought Dr. Deal's partner out in Student Unknowns. And this was another chemist. And Dr. Deal had Student Unknowns. And he called it Standard Sample Business. And we ran that and we sold those Student Unknowns.
They were mostly, as I recall, they were mostly
inorganics.
So, and then there'd be spiked samples, or seeded samples. And so then those would be converted to an answer sheet. So then the student, in quantitative analysis, would try to make a determination for the amount of iron, or there was manganese, and there was about three or four or five different inorganics that were mixed into some type of a powder.
And then we had a full set of steels. We had, and there were 25. And we had boxes that had five rows of five, so that there were 25 samples in a box. And then we provided then the professor with the code sheet. So all the professor had to do was compare the code sheet.
So it was then sold to quantitative analysis classes.
This was all college level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And this was a business in place that Harvey Deal had.
And his partner, Dr. Frederick, was his name. And we ran that then for 2 years. The first year, the sales were about $6,000. No, not profits. The sales were $6,000. And the next year, it was $5,500. And I said, Cliff, we're going in the wrong direction. This is not a business. And we've got to get something else. That's when Dr. Deal contacted Clifford and said that Dr. Burstworth had sent him this product called Versine. That was the trade name he gave, EDT, or ethylene diamine tetraacetate, EDTA.
How do you spell Versine?
I beg your pardon?
How do you spell Versine?
Versene.
But the standard samples provided a linkage.
It did. Well,
I guess I can't imagine what would have happened without that linkage, because you would have just had no other income flow.
That's right.
And it was quantitative analysis, so there is a strange linkage there that...
You're exactly right, Bruce, because, little by little, the third room back, Clifford got used benches from somewhere, I don't remember anymore, but he really got a lab built back there, and was, you know, so the chemistry was starting to flow at that time out of that very crude building.
In those first 2 years, walk us through a typical day. Clifford gets up early, fires up the furnace in the apartment building you're living in, heads into the three-room cinder block research lab and building.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You get up and
but the kids, well, of course, as I always said, I was there from day one, but so were the kids, because they played around there. We had a sandbox.
So you would go into the office.
Oh, you bet, you bet. Because I started doing the advertising.
How were the standard samples sold then?
By direct mail. And we had a mimeograph machine.
Didn't do any on standard samples, the student unknowns.
Yeah, yeah. And we had I developed, and this is when I really kind of got started with direct mail. I got a list of all the colleges that taught analytical chemistry, and we did our best to get the names of the head of the analytical chemistry department, and then we put out a letter and a fly sheet, and all of this was mimeographed, and we would mail it out, and by golly, orders started coming in, and then up in the front, and this three-room building was rectangular. Each room was, it was 45 feet long, it seems to me, and then each room then was 15 feet, and it was just, you know, everything was just perfectly rectangular. Well, in that front part, we made our shipping department, and we had a scale up there, and then we had a 1-ton Ford pickup truck, and that was our vehicle. That was for the company and for the family vehicle. So all four of us rode in a 1-ton pickup truck.
How many customers were there? How many universities? How many? You had some accounts then. Replenishment tests.
Well,
because I've really never heard.
But you know, let me tell you though, that one of the most important. I don't know, Bruce. How many clients we had. I do remember the amount of money. The $6,000 was total sales the first year, and $5,500 the second year total sales. And of course, I was very, very distressed about that. I thought, here we are again. We put all this into it, and this is not the way to go. We never received a single complaint from any college professor on the analysis. And I think that has to say something about the Clifford's ability as an analytical chemist.
Yes.
And I handled all the mail. If there was a complaint, I would have known it. And I answered the telephone, and there never was one. And I think that's really quite a because there you're getting out to the best of analytical chemistry. And of course, then we talked about, well, maybe we should get into organic analysis and other things, but then along came this EDTA.
Stay for a minute, still ahead of EDTA.
All right.
And your front room is the shipping department, and what Clifford is making up all the materials, is he? I mean, how?
Oh, yeah, yes, uh-huh. Oh, we had a ball mill.
I can't even remember. After they had a big ball mill, they'd make up the sample, roll it, and so forth. Then it would go into a gallon jar.
Yeah.
And then it would be marked as to exactly what it was, and then in sequential orders. But gosh, I even remember myself having to fill those things. They would oxidize then, and we actually go in with a little chisel and break them up into parts and then roll them out. And it would finally go into a little tiny vial.
Yeah,
and then
with
all,
a cork.
With a cork, a little cork on it. And then all of the various samples, according to...
the analysis.
The analysis, to the measurement, would be right down the rows. So they'd be like little, almost like eggs. There'd be a whole set of... And then they'd
That's
be
right.
stacked up and then sent to a university.
Mm-hmm. And then we'd put one, each, there are 25 different samples in this little box.
So then even in the very early days of water analysis, this business continued. So there was these big, those racks or the rows of the gallon jugs of, or the gallon bottles of the hardened sample.
You didn't abandon that
no,
business.
No,
you just
no,
said we need
no.
something else.
Once we got into the water analysis, we still
but it was only
kept the samples going.
How many more years did they keep going? There were some iron filings, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, somebody still has some bottles of that iron ore.
What, 5 years more? Maybe 10? I can't remember.
I would say really not more than 5 years.
Okay.
However, it was got to be kind of like a little... They were already paid for. They were already there. And the professors continued to order, so it was a little bit of a bread and butter item, you know.
Yeah, yes.
Maybe 10 years. It went on for really quite a little while until finally it was a nuisance, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So initially, Clifford was just very busy getting that stuff organized, I presume.
Oh well, and doing the analyses and yeah.
Yes. So was he? I mean, was there any time left over for doing anything else?
No. I did all the typing, typed all the labels, and typed the code sheets, of course, and then we put out the letters, you know, to sell it and so forth. So that was it.
We've heard that he was inclined to think 7 days are for working.
Oh, absolutely.
Was that how you lived?
Yes. Now I took Sundays off. I didn't
you were
run
allowed,
the plant
right?
on Sunday, but he didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he used to pride himself in that he had the hardness test paper. He always said that was an invention he made on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
He had a test papers for a hardness test, and it was blue, and you dip it in, and if it was hard, the paper turned pink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some early test strips.
That's right, the early test strip, and he always said that was invented on a New Year's Day.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't want to. You wouldn't want to take a vacation on.
yeah. Well, with a little business and little children, this is.
That's why the kids were little guys around the plant, mm-hmm. and I remember Mary turned a bottle of acid over on her. You know, she still has the scar from that. You know, we got her in a tub and soaking her with. Water and there were some accidents along the way.
Mm-hmm. Hard to teach a young child what acid is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
She turned that bottle over and there was a little bit in it. Ran out and ran on her leg, and it was the summertime. She was in the sand pile back there in the back of the plant, where she yelled and. Well, anyway, that was.
But. Throughout, Clifford's staying in touch with some of the people because Deal doesn't come to him out of the blue, does he?
Harvey Deal was a very difficult person and an irrational man in a lot of ways. It seemed like almost everybody at one time or another broke up with Dr. Deal, and that happened with Clifford. But then later on, they got back together. And I really don't and Harvey used to joke about it, how they had broken up and had gotten back together. So, and all the details of that, actually, boy, anymore. Bruce, do you remember any of that?
No, I don't. I really don't. But I do kind of remember this, though. Not remember this, but I just noticed as I look back historically, quantitative analysis was a huge part of the chemical curriculum, taken very seriously, a little bit differently than today.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yeah.
And, and I know that it was very rigorous. Yeah. And also, as I look, Harvey also produced a couple of textbooks. Mm. And I've got his textbooks. Yeah. And I even noticed that in, this even might be areas where it's even more demanding then than it is today. The students in the 30s and 40s, would actually start quantitative analysis classes by actually building some of their own test equipment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then from there they operated. And so there. So this was a big part of physical and analytical chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And so Harvey, it's always been my opinion, you might even disagree with this, but it's always been my opinion that Harvey saw some characteristics in Cliff, that he saw him as a good candidate to try to be able to forward improve simplified quantitative analysis methods, and because he obviously gave him some support, and because he was, you know, he did discover this article on the, what is it, the ectochrome tea dye and so forth, which created the endpoint in the titration.
Yeah.
So he was supportive.
Yeah. Yes.
And he could see something in Cliff that he didn't see in the other students.
I think there was another thing that happened. Cliff had a bad fire. He was making tetraphenyl arsenium chloride, and in the addition of some sodium, he had a bad fire. And, of course, and then they call the fire department, and this was in Gilman Hall. And they call the fire department.
Oh, which is the chemistry building. Yeah,
that's the big one. And, of course, in those days, you know, the firemen weren't very well trained in chemical fires.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so, you know what they did? They sprayed a gob of water, and the records of a number of the graduate students were absolutely destroyed. And we put together a little bit of the money that we had. I think it was kind of like $1,000 for each of the fellows. We tried to do the best that we could to...
When was this?
I knew you were going to ask that, Arnold, and I knew I was going to be able to say exactly when.
But was it before Clifford had graduated?
It was at the time, I think, of his graduation. It was right in there.
46, 47.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And...
did that sour relationships then?
And I think... maybe this isn't something you want to record, but I would, of course,
you can delete
Dr. Gale is gone, but I think that was an embarrassment for him, and maybe that was a good time for him to try and free himself of association with Clifford. And I think that, now there's one more thing here. Cliff was starting a chemical company, and it was already being called the first name was Hawk Chemical and Oxygen Company. Well, we got rid of that oxygen real quickly. And so it was the Hawk Chemical Company. And many times college professors are not people with a business leaning is not something that is always pleasing to academia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I think this whole thing is complex. I don't mean to be stuttering around, but it wasn't
it is.
There wasn't just a one big blow. There was a whole lot of little things.
So wasn't Harvey Deal? You said Harvey Deal was it was his supply company, the student unknowns.
Yeah, yeah, and we bought him out then finally. Yeah.
This was
because initially Deal was a part of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then because we just bought out Dr. Frederick. And this and Frederick and Deal were students at Wayne, and I think that's where they got their PhD.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we bought out was Dr. Frederick,
mm-hmm.
and then brought everything down, and so then when things became unpleasant, then we started a buyout program of Dr. Deal.
And was this before the Hawk company was launched or after?
No, the company was formed, and it was running.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this EDTA had already presented itself, and it was, but nobody knew what to do with it in those times.
So the kind of withdrawal with Harvey Deal was gradual.
Yes. Well, we didn't have the money to pay him off, and so little by little. There was a financial agreement with Art Lucht, and we'll come to you. Arthur Lucht was a man who was a banker, and he was Dr. Deal's banker, and he kind of engineered an agreement between the two of us, and so that was a factor there.
Yeah.
And we'll come to Arthur Lucht. Because he had quite when we come down here to the early years of the Hawk Chemical Company,
mm-hmm.
we'll tell you a little bit about building problems. But okay.
Well, here you are that your student unknowns has kind of gone into its second, it's going through its second year. It's not the answer.
Yeah.
And you've already mentioned Hawk Chemical and oxygen. I mean, talk about the groping, if you will.
It was this EDTA, and Dr. Berthold said, oh, by the way, it softens water. And then Clifford got this idea, hey, if this was softens water for some reason, of course, it was the chelating of the calcium and the magnesium, mm-hmm. and so he really got into this, and then he began to realize, hey, here is a product for the to get away from the old soap test, and really get a good test for hardness in water,
mm-hmm.
and that was the beginning, and so he really was pouring himself into that. And then, and he was working on buffers, and then, go ahead, Bruce.
Well, I was going to say, this is my understanding of that, but with this, and again, with this dye, this EDTA, and using...
And the aerochrome black tea.
Was the first time then, the first time that a precise endpoint, colorimetric endpoint, could be established in a titration.
That's right.
And then that created this little test kit. I understand up to that point. That endpoint had never been discovered anywhere. So now we had.
With the indicator, that's right.
So you count the number of drops, that'd be equivalent to the parts per million, and it would go from red to blue, and bingo. That had never been done before.
And aerochrome black tea turned out to be very unstable, and Clifford stabilized it.
And that was really his talent. It was really not necessarily always invention. It was just configuration and reformulation and restructuring and stabilization. In fact, stabilization was really almost the basis of the business. Taking an unstable reagent, stabilizing it, and then getting it to the point that it even could be pre-manufactured, pre-packaged.
Mm-hmm.
And,
of course, and all of that, of course, will lead into the powders and all of that. But now, wait a minute, there's one thing more I want to say here. You have a question. Clifford's early interest in chemistry, fluids, and water quality. Well, that isn't... with this hardness test, another thing was developing at the same time. Home water softeners. And they had salesmen out selling them. And in the early days, they went out there with those dumb, that old dumb soap test, you know, and to try and show the housewife, you know, that you've got a curd that develops and so forth.
That was virtually a misrepresentation, too, wasn't it? I mean, it was almost an exploitative test.
Well, no, that was the precipitate.